And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And well, as you know, this is Love Week, and our first guest in the beginning of the week, we talked about love. And of course, our second guest this week is Dorothy Ratuzny. Sorry, Dorothy. You know, I've had you here before. You'd think I would get the name. It's a very lovely name, but I have problems with letters or something, pronunciation. Anyway, welcome. We're going to need to get you talking. We're going to need to get you talking on the proper place. Sorry. Welcome, Dorothy.
Great to be here.
Anyway, Dorothy is the author of The Purpose of Love. So although there are some chapters in there that we're not going to touch just because this is about Valentine's Day and Love Week, and you know, there's one on breaking up, which is very important, and there's a lot of information on self-love, which we are going to touch on, but there's a few things that I might have you back to talk about because there are things that I would like to have addressed that we really, you know, really don't want to talk about during Love Week. Okay?
You want Love Week to be about love.
Exactly.
Being in love. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So now I think we've got you up in the proper place so that people can hear you. We did hear you, hopefully, but not as loud. Okay, so let's talk about the purpose of love. And not just the purpose of love, but the purpose of love in relationships. So you talk about the fact that it's stepping stones that brings you closer to your ideal relationship.
Yeah, I use that analogy because when I think about the purpose of relationships, it's not only to teach us about ourselves and about relationships and how we want to be in relationships, but if you're paying attention to the lessons that show up in your relationships and what they teach you, then theoretically, every relationship you have would be a stepping stone toward your ideal, or at least a stepping stone toward being closer to that ideal. So essentially, I mean, in theory, every relationship, as you learn about yourself and about what you want in a partner, is going to bring you closer to that ideal someone, that ideal partner.
Right. And it helps you become complete. And I like the fact that you separated that out because it's not about somebody coming to complete you. It's about you becoming complete in a relationship and something whole.
Yeah, and it's interesting because people have read the book and they've said, you know, I was really surprised that you talk a lot about building the person and self-esteem and figuring out what you want out of a relationship. And I said, yeah, I couldn't possibly write a book about love and about couples without talking about what's fundamentally important, which is you yourself and feeling good about yourself before you are in a relationship. So, yeah.
I wanted to read something. It's actually the prologue to your book. Your capacity to love another human being completely with understanding and forgiveness exemplifies who you are. Your love relationships are always reflective of the relationship you currently have with yourself. The greater your willingness to move beyond what you have always done and to challenge yourself to grow, to seek more from yourself and your life, the greater the likelihood that your relationships will be far more rewarding and honest, largely as a result of your desire to make them so. That's really beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
And really, it's what the book is all about. It really is trying to help you discover and really understand that, you know, relationships are our greatest teacher, for sure. And from understanding ourselves more, we can create that great relationship.
That's right. And people who come in with really low self-esteem, poor sense of self, are often struggling in their love relationship and or struggling to find a relationship. And I remind clients all the time of this, that if you want to create that ideal relationship that you have in your mind, you've really got to work on yourself. And I see it all the time because people who have poor self-esteem and who are in a relationship are going to countlessly come up against problems in their relationship, in part because of their low self-esteem.
Yeah. You also write that it's about becoming inspired to learn and develop and evolve. So a relationship inspires us to develop and evolve our own being. And evolving spiritually is really, I think, the next part of where we're moving towards, and a really important part.
Yeah, it's tough sometimes in my job, because I think people come to a therapist often as a last resort to save their relationship. But I try to educate people that success doesn't always mean staying in the relationship or saving a relationship. Sometimes to be successful, it means to let go of that relationship and to be able to find the right relationship. And I have one couple in particular I've been working with, and they've been married over 30 years. And they are at a place where I call spiritually incompatible with each other. So they love each other as people. They have a great family. They have a great life. But they're not in love with each other. And they don't have those feelings that they once had. And they can't figure out how come. And I can see the hurt, and I can see the suffering in both of them. And yet you can't create something that's not there. And when you talked about that, when you talk about the spiritual part of it, and I believe if you search for that, if you're in search of that, then you can find a partner that's going to allow you to evolve spiritually. And also, in other situations, people become, what I said earlier, spiritually incompatible, meaning that for really no particular reason, and it's not logical, they've kind of, if you believe in this, they've kind of finished the purpose or the reason why they came together in relationship. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that one or both did anything wrong, so to speak, but it just means that their reason for being in relationship has been completed.
Right. And you do talk a lot about that. And it's not that I don't want to talk about that, because I do think it's very important. Of course, because this is Love Week, we want to find ways to make it work. And you know, I don't know what you do in a case. And I've certainly been in a relationship where, because it wasn't one where we were evolving together, and mostly it was one where he was stuck where he wanted to be, and I needed to move forward to be part of my own growth. And, you know, it really, for someone who had abandonment issues all of their life, was one of the most difficult things I ever did, not because I didn't love and honor myself, because there was, other than that, there was nothing wrong with the person or the relationship. It was a beautiful relationship that lasted a very long time. It's just that I also knew that I needed something more. And so I totally understand when that comes into, you know, your therapy, that you have to kind of help them, and especially one that's 30 years long, where they've got children and a whole life that they've built, must be very difficult.
Yeah. And it requires a lot of courage, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if people are searching for love, if we can kind of, you know, I'm trying to remember the theme of it this week of being love, right? Then sometimes you have to let go, as you did, as others have done, in order to get to love, the love that you truly are searching for. And that's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also what's required. And I do think, I'm sorry, you know, because I know out there everyone's focusing on, you know, Valentine's and romance and chocolate and candles and all that great stuff. But as a society, we've been taught that there is a happily ever after. Mm-hmm. And that once you find that person, you're happy forever and ever and ever. And it's not exactly so. We'd like that to be the case. It's easy. It's simple. But it rarely is the case. And so just the fact that we have different relationships, that we have more than one girlfriend or boyfriend in our lifetime, suggests that we don't just meet one person and it works out happily ever after, right? So I think part of love is also being really honest with yourself, and it's not being willing to accept what's okay. And I talk about this in this whole chapter in the book about, you know, the difference between okay and incredible. It doesn't have to be just okay when it can be incredible. Mm-hmm. And there's things to do in a relationship to make your current relationship incredible. But, you know, as we talked about, also recognizing where their limits are in the relationship is important as well.
And because a love relationship is, as you write, one of the single most important influences in our present-day life, it's important that we have full consciousness.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the things that I talk about with couples is, you know, it's a very simple thing, but to connect with each other, to stay connected, to feel love, you've got to be able to talk and communicate from a really honest and open place. And a lot of people struggle with that.
Mm-hmm. And it's because we can't be open and honest with ourselves. I mean, we have so much fear around hurting someone or our perception of hurting someone and, you know, not knowing, you know, this big thing about wanting to be liked, you know, so we're always trying to do something, especially women, but I don't think it's just women. I think there are a lot of men out there that are just the same, that we're trying desperately for everybody to like us or love us. So we we can't be truthful and honest because we're afraid that, well, what if what I say hurts that person or, you know, they won't love me anymore, as she's being adored by my cat.
I don't know if you talked to your listeners about your cat, but Jasper's beautiful. So it's all good. Love is in the air, so it's all good. Yeah, you bring up some good points. And I think more importantly, and that's why self-esteem comes back into it, more importantly, more important than worrying about if others will accept us or like us or love us, we have to be comfortable and accepting and loving of ourselves. And that's why, you know, as I said, there's a whole chapter on self-esteem and self-worth because you have to have that, period, mm-hmm. Right?
Oh, we're going to get there. We're going to get there. So it's interesting, and it's something that I always talk about, but, you know, the template to love relationships is from our own family, from our parents. And I like this where you say that, you know, our core beliefs, they were already ingrained in us by the age of 3 to 5. That's kind of scary, but it's, you know, it's true.
There's a lot of work that I do with couples and individual clients on core beliefs. And yes, I mean, core beliefs are those absolute statements that we have about ourselves. And we learn them both directly and indirectly from our family of origin, from our caregivers. And the positive core beliefs, they're not a problem. They're wonderful. They're things like, I'm a good person, I'm a kind person, I'm a generous person. But it's the negative core beliefs, or what I call problematic core beliefs, that get us in trouble. And those more commonly are one of a few things, such as, I'm not good enough, I'm unlovable, I'm stupid. And if we have one of those core beliefs, or more than one of those, it affects every single thought we have. So I liken it to a plant, a living plant. The core beliefs are the roots, and the thoughts are the leaves of the plant. So the leaves are only as healthy as the roots are. And so our core beliefs affect our day-to-day thinking about ourselves, others, and the world. And so they show up in our relationships, because if we have this core belief that we're not good enough, it doesn't matter what our partner does, it doesn't matter how good the relationship is, we're going to feel as though we don't deserve that person, we don't deserve happiness, we aren't in some way good enough as a partner, as a mother, as a father, and that affects how we are, how we think, how we feel, mm-hmm. Right? So I often with clients will get to the core belief, and it isn't something that you can figure out for yourself. It almost requires somebody, and there's a process in therapy that helps you to uncover it. So it's usually very, very helpful in therapy to kind of look at one's core beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Always. And I don't know if I've mentioned this because I don't think I have, but Dorothy is a therapist that works in the Toronto area and a very good therapist.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, our core beliefs, we've got behaviors that are our actions and our reactions, and they're determined by how we feel. And so if someone perceives that they're not good enough or that abandonment is their issue, which is a good one for me because I frequently have gone through that in my life, that it doesn't matter what happens, we will always perceive, if something is out of alignment with us, that that's the reason.
One might look at a situation where they feel abandoned and say, you know what did I do wrong, or what was it about me that caused this to happen? So yeah, your core beliefs affect how you perceive situations in your relationship and what happens. So a relationship can end and someone can go on for a long time and blame themselves incorrectly about the ending of that relationship because of their core beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I use examples in the book, and I talk about core beliefs in the book because it's fundamental to our lives, but you don't have to be in a couple to look at and discover and work on your core beliefs. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it would be good to, I mean, it's definitely good to work through them while you're in the relationship so you don't repeat the pattern, which is a big thing that typically happens, or we just not only recreate it, we just bring somebody back into our lives that are very similar, because that's the power of attraction. That is how we work. Until we can heal those core wounds, we're not able to create and bring healthy relationships into our lives.
And that's why, whether you're in a relationship or not, I think people could value reading the book, and certainly if
Definitely.
They're in therapy, look at, you know, value looking at and benefit from looking at their core beliefs, for sure.
Right. So the purpose of love is putting yourself first. Talk about that.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
I don't know if I said it exactly like that.
Maybe
but,
not.
But the It's important to know what your needs are and to address your needs. And that doesn't always mean putting your needs first, but it's important to be...
No, putting you first. Not necessarily your needs, but putting you first, as in self-love, as in, you know, you talked about conscious breathing, you know, your relationship with you, to have a healthy, loving, kind, and compassionate relationship with yourself, so that you can create that within another.
Right, right. And that's a good way of putting it. I think you have to really honor what's right for you and what your needs are, and yourself, as you said, before you can expect to or plan to give of yourself to others. And I think when I and this is predominantly more with women clients, when I hear them talk about having given so much of themselves to their family, to their spouse, to their family, well, I said family, to their lives,
their friends,
yeah,
their work,
their bigger
their
circles, right?
Yeah.
And when you start uncovering that, it's like they've long forgotten how to put themselves on the list, how to take care of themselves, how to give to themselves. So, yeah, I mean...
Well, it's true. I mean, I have a lot of clients that I work with that, you know, they forget that, you know, every relationship is about you first. Like, everything that they do, you know, they're blaming somebody else for. And so when they judge the other person, when they're in a place where they're, you know, blaming and judging, you know, it's really about refocusing them back on themselves and understanding that those places where they're feeling judgment and they're feeling that they're, you know, that the other person is to blame is really about how or whether they're feeling, you know, their own love and compassion for themselves, because I think that's where it sort of falls.
Yeah, that's a good point, because... what happens is, rather than speaking from their truth, rather than them being honest about what's wrong or what their thoughts and feelings are, they're kind of plowing through that, not saying anything, not speaking directly about it if they do speak about it. And so time goes by and resentments build and frustrations and judgments, and they're so misplaced by that point. So the book talks about being honest both mm-hmm. with yourself and your partner.
And I think about, you know, all the relationships that I've been in all the relationships that, you know, where people talk to me about themselves. And it's just really, really important when we get, you know, to understand that it's all about self-love. And it, like, I can't seem to talk about that as enough. Is it, you know, when they get into a relationship, they say all they ever want is to be loved. And I've heard that before. And it's, you know, there's a part of it that's so true that, you know, that is what we want. We all. There's not one person on this world who doesn't want to be loved or accepted, you know, unconditionally for who they are. That's our kind of a core need, really, that often isn't filled when we're children because our parents seem to put conditions on love. And so we learn that there are supposed to be conditions on love, or we think to get love, we have conditions on it. And really, the only way you can kind of heal that and understand that is by doing your inner work first and really learning how to love yourself.
And while that's true, a lot of us don't know how to love ourselves because we don't have that template or that model, right? As
exactly.
You talked about not receiving it unconditionally. So
somebody is really trying to get your attention, huh?
So she's talking about
Jasper.
So as an adult, you're left with, okay, how do I love myself? I know I'm supposed to, but how do I do that? And building your self-esteem, and there's many ways to do that, is definitely a starting place, because when you start to feel better about yourself, it's easier to like and then love yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So again, like in the context of a therapy session, if someone wants to work on self-esteem, that's a piece to building self-love. It's like self-love, I think, for a lot of people is just a word until they actually start to experience moments of feeling better about themselves, feeling higher self-worth, feeling greater confidence, and then that's sort of the path towards self-love. It's a path. I mean, there are things, it's ongoing. And like you said, we don't all have the experience in childhood of feeling unconditional love. And if you have had parents that have provided you with unconditional love, I mean, you're so fortunate, because a lot of people don't have that experience. I had one client just today talk about one of the things that he experienced in one relationship that he's never had since, which he identified as being unconditional love. And I reminded him that that's really a marker. If because he's never experienced that before, and he's recently separated from being married, and the marriage wasn't a relationship where he felt unconditional love, I reminded him that going forward, when he goes to look for a partner, that marker, that feeling of what it was like to feel love unconditionally, is something that he does need to look for and to make sure that he has. And now that he has had that experience, he knows what it feels like. But mm-hmm. for those people who've never felt unconditional love, it's almost like you have to go and figure out what that looks like, you mm-hmm. know, and try and create that from an alternative place, because you don't have that personal experience, right?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, well, I talk about this a lot, and I mean, one of the ways that you can experience that is through our animals, because they offer unconditional love, always. They may be a little playful and a little rambunctious sometimes, but from a place of love, that's certainly what they offer. And that, for some people, for a lot of people, is the only place they ever experience that.
Absolutely. And you know what else I believe? I believe having children teach us unconditional love. And it's not to say we all need to have children. That's not my message. But people who say, you know, having a child has changed my life, I often think that a big part of that comes from the unconditional love that they've learned, that's showed up, that's kind of come from within them that they weren't aware of, that's been part of that experience having a child, where they've never allowed themselves. See, the ticket is, we all have that ability within us to love unconditionally. We don't always tap into it. Animals, if we allow ourselves to, they will let us tap into that because we can just experience that with them. Children, the same thing. If because they're our child, we can often tap into that place of complete unconditional love.
Mm-hmm. Until we start putting conditions on them, but definitely, and that's, you know, that becomes the problem that gets recreated if they've never experienced it. But to experience that for that whatever period of time, then again they have that cellular memory of what unconditional love is, so then that's what they start to want to continue, or to at least have a place where they can start something.
I think people refer to it as joy. They talk about looking at their child with such joy. But what that is that experience comes directly from the heart, and that's love. Mm-hmm. And you don't need a child to feel it, and I wish more people would. It's like anchoring that feeling. So once they feel unconditional love and they're able to put a label on it or attach a word to it, it's like, okay, anchor that feeling so that you know what that's like, so you can give that to other people and to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Authentic happiness.
Yeah. That again comes from self-honesty. It comes from being very truthful with what's right for you, with doing what's right for you. It may mean that as a couple, you know, you're not attending a function with your partner at his family's thing because it's not at that moment right for you to do that. Authentic happiness comes from being really truthful with yourself about what you need, what's right for you. And it may not always be what's right as a couple. It may mean you have to do some things individually, but it means knowing what's best and right in your life so that you can feel happy, so that you're not just being led along by the other person without recognizing what things you need to be happy.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. It's knowing what you want. It's knowing what you need that brings that happiness that a lot of people just don't put enough energy into, don't put enough focus on, you know, what is it that you want? Because what you want brings you happiness. And as long as you're authentic about going about getting it, and it's not, you know, about putting someone else down, or, you know, it's about you really truly knowing that you deserve it, that you are divine, that there's nothing wrong with getting what you want. And a lot of times I think people just, they either forget or they just don't feel worthy enough to even ask for what they want, or they can't communicate it.
We still go outside of ourselves a lot of the time for what we think will make us happy, what we think is the right thing. And I see that, you know, when people choose their careers, when they choose their spouses, when they choose their loves. If you step away from yourself and you look to what other people have and you look to things that you think will make you happy, you just get farther away from figuring it out, right? So I often encourage people to be really introspective, be really thoughtful, be really honest about what are the very simple things that make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I even say to, you know, them, write down the things that you experience pure joy from doing.
Yeah.
And that could just be walking in the park, in the snow. It doesn't have to be anything profound. That's the stuff that brings us joy. And then knowing how to create that in our lives, right? Amongst the other stuff that we claim we have to do in a day.
Yeah. So that it can help you shift out of a place where you're not feeling the authentic happiness. You're not getting that inner peace. I don't know how many times I've told people, like, find something that brings that, like something. It could be a piece of music, it could be going for a walk. I mean, there's so many things that are simple that can shift somebody so quickly, but yet we get caught up in the drama and we don't know where to start.
So I hope the book will give people some ideas.
That's right.
Around creating authentic happiness. Yeah.
So rethinking cultural norms.
You're good. She throws out these little snippets of subtitles in my book, and I can expand. Okay, I love it. That's that's part of what I said earlier when I was referring to how we kind of have this Cinderella philosophy that we're going to meet the right person and live happily ever after. And one of the cultural norms is that we, you know, we'll meet that special person, everything will be simple and easy. And relationships require work. They shouldn't require so much work that it takes up all of your energy and time and you're filled with angst all the time. But they require work in the sense that you need to give them attention. You need to give them devotion. You need to be honest and have really real conversations with your partner. And one of the cultural norms, too, is that, you know, doing all the traditional societal sort of, you know, optimal things like marriage, formal marriage and children and houses and two cars and all that stuff is part of what makes you happy and what's going to make a great relationship. And we know that that isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
Right? 'Cause
and the way religions sort of dictate what a marriage is supposed to be. And I mean, it's just, it is kind of crazy. I mean, you really need to identify what you want, not what everybody else tells you is what you're supposed to do. I mean, so many people blindly just, you know, enter into relationship, enter into a marriage, enter into having children, and then what? You know, then they're at this place where they have this, you know, crisis or whatever it is. But, you know, it's difficult because we follow these cultural norms until something happens that we go, oh, wait a minute, this isn't what I signed up for. Something happens that sort of triggers them, sort of starts to wake them up.
And you'd be surprised by the number of clients I'm seeing now that are unhappy because they followed all of the quote-unquote rules of what they thought tradition and society said were the right things to do. And they're now, you know, in their 50s and separated, and their children have gone off and they're living their own lives. And they're like, wait a minute, what happened here? Mm-hmm. All the things that I thought were important and what I thought would be right and what would make me happy, none of those are true anymore. So if you can come back to, and this isn't just once or twice, you have to keep coming back to what's making me happy now. What do I need to feel happy now? And revisiting that as your life goes on, if you are able to do that, then there's a greater likelihood that you're going to be able to stay authentically happy, right? Because you're always going to be tapping into that and asking the questions, right?
And those questions are really important.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Really important.
They are.
So we're going to go into the dating essentials. But I love how you started this chapter with, you know, that practice makes perfect. They're really, the real purpose to love is to practice so that you can get to the place where you can create your ideal mate, or that you can bring your ideal mate into your life.
Yeah, I had fun with the different chapter headings of this book. And so I wanted to remind people that there is a purpose to dating, because I have clients who come in and they say, you know what, I've been dating for so many years and I haven't met that right person. And I had to remind people that dating is important. Dating is how we try on what we think we want in another person and see if it fits, see if it works for us. We learn about ourselves. We decide if these things we thought we wanted are really that important still. We have an opportunity to, if we ask the question, we have an opportunity to be really clear about what we really want in a partner. And so, you know, you would expect that when you're in your teens, you don't think about that stuff. But yet the choices you make as you date in your teens are really going to help shape the kind of people you choose in your 20s and so forth, which kind of comes to my stepping stone theory, right? But
yeah,
the idea about dating is that we have to figure some stuff out, and how better to do that than have a relationship, right?
If only we could not have the attachment to what the relationship means to us, because I think that's where we get all caught up, the expectations and the attachments to what the relationship is. If we could see it as stepping stones and see it as, well, this is just another opportunity to, you know, make different choices. Instead, it's all or nothing. We put out so much and then we feel like we're a failure.
Got it. And I think too, you probably come to, or people come to a certain age in their life where that's what's happening, is they want so very much to have that person spend the rest of their life with, that they do everything possible to try to make it work, even when deep down inside they know that it's not the right person, or the relationship isn't healthy, or whatever it is. So again, I think it's part of that, you know, tradition or that belief system that we're taught, that
we're to be living happily ever after.
Yeah. And
they really did mess us up with those fairy tales, didn't they?
I still think, you know, I hear people say it's a failure if the relationship ends, and you know, I have to remind them, is it or is it a failure if you stay and you're unhappy with the rest of your life, right? So it's about challenging those cultural norms that you spoke about earlier, and it's about being willing to not just settle and not just go through the motions because on paper you have what you're supposed to have.
Yeah.
Not everybody's willing to do that, and that's okay. But I think you can feel so much more fulfilled if you are willing to do that.
And so many people feel that they're, you know, there's not going to be somebody else better out there. There's so many people that are afraid, I guess, and that's probably the I'm not enough, or, I mean, there's so many core beliefs that they could be, that could be impacting that. But there's so many people that hold on so desperately, and probably to the, because of the cultural norms and because of all the beliefs that they have, but they hold on so desperately, either to a past love that's been gone for several years, or, you know, to a love that, you know, is current but has also been gone for several years.
And I, you know, I see that in my practice too, and that's usually for me a time when I would work with that individual person, not in the couple, not as a couple, but as the individual, and have them refocus back on what's important to them. And what they're doing is they're giving up a lot of what's important to them, sacrificing that for the sake of having a person, because they're, for whatever reason, whether it's afraid of losing a person, whether it's fear of abandonment, whether it's failure, whether it's feeling alone or being lonely, whatever the reason is, they're afraid to let go.
Mm-hmm. And so in your book, you talk a lot about, you know, having your eyes wide open, but it's about being conscious about where you are, what you want, you know, what you're looking for, what's important in your life. And I think, you know, I believe, because one of your chapters is on soulmates that I really want to talk about, because it's a pertinent, and it's also a lovely time to talk about that. But, you know, there's a lot of people that they're not really being conscious when they're dating. They're not really being conscious while they're in a relationship. And I think that's really where we're headed. I mean, I think it's a really fascinating time that we're in, that I don't think, you know, there's so many single people out there that have never been in history. And there's so many people that are very needy and desperate and are seeking or searching for that ideal partner. But how conscious are we when we're doing this? Like, how conscious are we as we're evolving individually and as we are thinking about what we want in a relationship?
I'm hoping that because there seems to be this shift happening where we are looking for something more in our lives and we are striving to be more consciously aware, that we will begin to look at things differently. But I really do believe, and I'll often say to clients, the more you can work on yourself while you're single, use that time. I mean, I talk about it in the book too. There's a lot to be done when you're single, and we're so busy looking for the next relationship or getting out there and dating right away. We forget that this is a time we can work on ourselves, and it's probably pretty important that we do so in order to find the right person. So usually you get out of a relationship and you have certain feelings that are attached to the ending of that relationship. But most certainly you want somebody that is better than the last person in some way, right? Or you want more of the qualities that you're really looking for in the next person. And you can't expect to find that unless you're willing to be that. Unless you're willing to work on the things about yourself that could be better and evolve that. So basically, you're going to be looking for a person of that same level in terms of evolution, whether it's psychologically, emotionally, spiritually. You're going to have a better match if you're a better match. So you might be going around looking to get into the next relationship, but I'll remind clients that that is a time where you need to be most consciously aware of what you need to do to improve upon yourself.
And there's also seems to be a phenomenon of a lot of people that are searching that seem to be, and I think maybe they're taking part of what you're saying a little too far, where they're, you know, no one is good enough. So they're not dating. And I think it's really important if you could just, again, not have that expectation that this has to be the one, but to just get out there and to date and just enjoy life. I think we take life so seriously and this spiritual journey so seriously, and, you know, we forget to have fun. We forget to just enjoy life, and we forget that, you know, it's all a journey. So let's just have fun while we're on it instead of having this deep need to be in another relationship, but yet enjoy and just go out and date.
And I'm hoping that people will see that chapter on dating and maybe think about dating differently. But you're right. I think just to put yourself out there with the perspective of making a new friend or meeting new people or just expanding your views on things, that's going to help you grow and evolve as well. And it's not just about meeting the next right person. So yeah, that's a very good point.
Mm-hmm. I've seen so much of it lately, and you just wonder. And so we need to talk about asking the important questions, because again, this comes back to how, you know, we are so afraid that we're either going to hurt somebody or, you know, that they're not going to like us, that we just don't ask the right questions. We don't dig deep enough while we're, you know, and it's a big deal when you're younger. As you get older, you know, things about marriage or children, I mean, they may not be as important. They may be, but they may not be. Or, of course, if you're women our age, they may be, actually. But to me, it's not. But these are all things that you need to find out. Like, they're things that you really need to look at, and if it's important to you, then don't be with somebody who it's not important to.
Yeah, I think there's probably two streams, right? Like,
yeah.
One is not asking enough of the deep questions, and then the other is you go on a first date and someone's just asked you like six or seven of, you know, and basically, you know, it's all on the table in the first 10 minutes. So there's probably a happy medium
to that.
And that
scares the crap out of most men. So yes, that's right. Don't be doing that on the first date.
Yeah. But
but before you, you know, move in together and get married, it would be really important.
I think we forget that, you know, before we even ask those important questions, we need to know what the answers are for ourselves.
Oh.
So you could ask, you know, do you want kids to that person? But you got to know what you want. And you got to be really clear about the importance of that to you, because if someone says, for example, they want children and you don't, I mean, you've got to be really clear about what that means when you start into a relationship. So yes, I agree. You have to ask those important questions, not all at once on the first date, but soon, within those first three or four dates, you got to know, right? You got to know, because it's important. It's mm-hmm. important to know, but also know what it is that you want. And that's really important as well.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us are still swayed by, maybe they'll change their mind, and or B, well, I'll just, you know, I'll figure it out as I go along, or, you know, I'll decide later. And I really believe you have to know. The more decisions that you can be clear about for yourself, that's gonna assist you in where you go in a relationship and the kind of people that you're gonna choose as partners.
Yeah, I mean, there are some things, and I know that you know, for a lot of women, a lot of men, you know, money seems to be a big issue. And to me, it's not so much, you know, what the income is that somebody makes or, you know, whether they have a lot of money. I always throw it back on the person is, why is that important to you? What does it mean to you, and why is that a trigger for you if you're always getting into relationships where men are unemployed or you're the one that's always taking care of them? Or, you know, like, you also have to do your own work on around some of the things that are really important to you as well.
One of the exercises that I give to clients, and I have it also illustrated in the book, is this idea of creating an ideal list, an ideal list of all the qualities that you're looking for in a mate. And that kind of speaks to what you're talking about, because if you take the time to really think about what's important to you, and some of those things can change, they do change for people, but if some of the things, like, you know, material or wealth or goods or whatever is important to you, be really honest about it. I think what you're talking about there is if you're always attracting a certain kind of person, or the qualities seem to be showing up again and again, I mean, that's more to do with you, obviously, right? So it's about what's going on that's what you're consciously or unconsciously looking for, right? But in terms of finding the right partner, I mean, I had one woman at her wedding say, you know what, I did that ideal mate list and it was 6 pages long, and 90% of what my husband now, you know, my husband now has, or the things I wanted, was what he had, right? And so it's stuff like that that I think, you know, being really clear about what you want, being willing to write it down, being really true about it and honest about it, it's going to help you find that. So even if you're attracting, let's say, someone that's not financially stable, but you want that, being really honest about the fact that you want that helps you to be more accountable to yourself in terms of looking for that. And so you begin to be more aware that, okay, so if this person I started, you know, to date, you know, is unemployed or whatever the criteria is, and I know I don't want that, I need to be honest with myself and choose accordingly, right? And that may mean not continuing in that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's talk about soulmates and soulmate relationships.
Okay.
Now, I have a different view slightly, but, you know, it's semantics in some cases.
Okay.
Where I definitely agree that we have, like, a soul group that, as we come into this world, there's a lot of people that are part of that soul group that are here to help us evolve and to grow. And sometimes people from your soul group are the last people you want to be in a relationship with, because they're really here to push you and to move you towards where you're wanting to go. And I think, you know, once you've sort of done your work, then when you get into a soul, like a soulmate relationship that's a love relationship, then it can be a whole different ballgame. But in the, you know, until you sort of do some of your work, they push and push and push, and, you know, sometimes it's the last person you want into a relationship. But let's talk about soulmate relationships.
I talk about soulmates in the book, and I also talk about being spiritually
evolved
and compatible with someone.
Yes.
And they're related, but they're also a little different. So I think more important than what my beliefs are around soulmates is just that the fact that a soulmate by definition is someone that is someone that you feel very connected to almost immediately, someone that you feel very comfortable with, and if it just feels like there's some sort of connection or history that you've had, even though you may not have ever known them before, right? So it's almost like you've got a connection on a deeper level.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that makes a soulmate, if I could use that term, more special than any other kind of relationship, is the unconditional love that's there, present immediately, the acceptance, And the ability of that soulmate, that partner, to be able to add immensely to the quality of your life. That's not to say that once you're in a soulmate relationship, it will automatically last forever. Mm. But if you've been able to be fortunate enough to reconnect with someone on that level, to have a soulmate relationship, it's almost as if your ability to grow and evolve in the world is propelled that much quicker because of the synergy that exists between the two of you. And it works for both people. So it's never one-sided. It's always reciprocal. It doesn't mean that soulmate relationships don't require work and effort and lots of love, but they just simply are experienced as very, very different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I know there's a lot of fantasy out there about soulmate and the twin flame idea, which I cringe every time I hear, yet, you know, I certainly know that there are people out there that believe wholeheartedly that, you know, they can't be complete without that other person because the twin flame theory is that we were somehow separated and, you know, are coming back in this life to become whole again. I have problems with that. I think we've always been whole, and it's just a matter of finding someone, I think, that's part of our soul group that really allows us to go to that evolution and to definitely have that unconditional love that just allows us to take it one step further, to take it into a more spiritual relationship. And it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a spiritual relationship if that's not where your focus is, but I think we're certainly moving to that place where that is really what it's becoming.
I think the benefit of being in a soulmate relationship, if you feel that that's what you have, is the ability through being in relationship that you are able to feel whole. And to agree with you, I would have to say that it's not because of the person that you feel whole, it's because of yourself. But it's not without the love and the encouragement and the acceptance of that person, because to feel whole, unconditional love is a huge piece to that, right?
Mm-hmm. And I agree that you totally, in any relationship that has to do with a soul group, I think they really do assist to push us. And in wherever that relationship shows up in our life, when we are at a place where we can accept, you know, a love relationship from our soul group, you know, it really does take it to a different level. And, you know, because the only reason I talk about that is that I've been in, well, almost everybody I meet these days, but, you know, from a very long time, I've always been able to connect with people and know that they have, that I've been with them in other lives. And yet, once actually being in a relationship with someone from my soul group, it's a completely different experience than the ones before. But yet I've always been aware, almost anybody that you get in, that you feel a connection with, and I guess that's because I've been an empath all my life, that, you know, I've always been able to feel connections with people. And so that feeling, I've always known when people are from, you know, past lives or different experiences. So that's, and that's not everybody's experience, obviously, but it certainly has been mine. And again, having the honor and blessing, I guess, of being in a relationship with somebody from my soul group, it is very different, and it comes from a deeper level. But it also is because you know, we, because we both obviously, our spiritual path is incredibly important to both of us. You know, as we continue to grow, we lose some of the attachments to some of the other things that used to trigger us. That, and so as you grow, your relationships change completely. And, you know, you can open your heart to a different place and you can be in that place. And so therefore, you would only start attracting people that, you know, would be from a soul group.
And something I wanted just to clarify in terms of soulmates, I mean, consistent with what you're talking about with people from your soul group, you can have a soulmate relationship with your father, with your
exactly.
sister, and it's not about a romantic relationship. It's about that soul group experience, but yet here you are feeling a real kinship with your father, let's say, and really feeling like you've, again, been together in a previous time. But the soulmate connection here in this lifetime is very special and very unique and very, very precious and on many different levels. And I, you know, I talk about it in relation to love and romance, but it also shows up in our lives with family members, right?
Mm-hmm.
As being people that usually are part of our soul group, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
If we're lucky, yes. Really lucky.
Yes, okay, that's a good point.
Yeah, because a lot of times your family
so
far
be.
From there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And I mean, I know I had a boss from hell who would have been from my soul group. I'm sure of it because she pushed me to a place where I could, you know, to get to my evolution, to wake me up. She pushed hard enough for me to go, okay, yeah, this is not who I am, and I need to get out of here, and I need to get on with my spiritual journey. And, you know, so I know that even though I just know that there are people sometimes that aren't always relationships that are compatible or in any way,
right.
But that, you know, are there to really push us. And that's really what you're talking about in that chapter. It's all about, you know, the evolution towards it. And they're, you know, what they're exhibiting is unconditional love because they're there to make sure that when we got to that place, if we weren't where we were supposed to be, then they would push us out and make sure that we get there. So even though it didn't feel like unconditional love at the time, when I can look back at it, you know, I'm very grateful for the experience, and I recognize that that's exactly what I contracted her out to do, to make sure that if I got to that place at that time, we would be, you know, she would make sure that I got out.
Unconditional love? I don't know.
Yeah.
But maybe from your soul group, I could see that. I don't know that she would have had unconditional love.
Consciously, no. Unconsciously, from a different place, from a spiritual place, you know, I think.
Okay.
Maybe.
That's another interview.
Yeah, exactly.
That's another day.
Cool. Okay, so I can't believe the time has flown by very quickly. We're coming up to Valentine's Day. What do you recommend? What do you recommend for couples?
I recommend that instead of buying into the media hype message of flowers and romance and sex and chocolate, that they simply take all of those expectations and perceptions of what Valentine's Day should be, put them aside, and make time to connect with one another on a heart level, on a level from being really open, really honest, from a place of love. And I think we miss that. We get all the frills and all the things together and try to make it special and unique and, you know, fireworks. And yet, you can't have all that stuff truly unless you're... You can't really feel that stuff truly unless you're connected from a much deeper place. And a lot of us don't even get tap into that place. We feel that the Valentine's, you know, with all the stuff that we're told we should have and, you know, the dinner and all that stuff. But are we really connecting from that place of love, from a place of being really open and honest with one another? And I can guarantee that if couples can get to a place in their communication where they're really being truthful with their partner and with themselves, that connection that they feel is a lot more strong and powerful than any frills and any exterior stuff that they can build will give them. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, I was just going to say, in the one chapter, she does talk about all the different things that a relationship should have. And, you know, it's about respect and understanding and forgiveness and honesty, your self-esteem, expectations. And then, you know, what about the sex? And which, you know, is, if you can get there, if you have all the rest, then the sex is amazing. Right.
Do you want me to comment?
Well, you know, if you want.
I didn't realize I was writing a book that would have the words orgasm and sex, and but I was, and those words are in the book, and they're there for a reason. And yes, just as much as we need to work on the everyday aspects of a relationship, part of that deeper communication connects us so that the sex part is good, the sex part is easy. And making time for sex or intimacy or just simply affection is completely important, right? So I think I've said this before, you know, in other interviews, where sex is the barometer of a relationship. If you're having sex frequently, regularly, I'll say even, you know, that's telling. And if you're not having sex, that's also speaking volumes. So what we forget sometimes is that you can't get to the sex part if you're not connected. And while men will argue that sex is a way for them to connect, women will say that they have to feel connected to have sex. So at some point, you know, there's got to be compromise, because at some point you've got to have sex so that he can feel connected, so that you guys can have that deeper conversation, et cetera, right? So There's got to be that compromise for both people, but recognizing that the two go hand in hand, the honesty, the communication is equally as important as making time for romance and sex and intimacy.
Yeah, sorry, I got sidetracked on my favorite topic. And so for singles on Valentine's Day, you recommend?
I recommend taking a little bit of pressure off what Valentine's Day is supposed to be in terms of what we've ascribed it to be, and being okay with being single and who you are. And if that means treating yourself to something that is special and makes you feel great, wonderful. But Valentine's Day isn't simply about being in a couple relationship. Valentine's Day, you know, is comes back to about love and what it means to experience love. And I think that if you're single, there is, as I talk about in the book, a lot of good reasons why you should embrace that and be okay with that and accept that, because there's a lot of important things you need to do when you're single before you get into a relationship.
Dorothy, it's been wonderful.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed our evening. We'll have to have you come back, because there's so much more we can talk about.
I would love that. Thank you. It's been lots of fun.
And, you know, just an aside, if you didn't hear the interview last week, this Valentine's Day, which is very interesting because it's supposed to be 7:22 GMT time, which is green, whatever that is in the UK. Greenwich, whatever, which is also 2:22 a.m. on Valentine's Day here, or Eastern Standard Time. There is an alignment that's happening astrologically where in the song, The Age of Aquarius, that alignment is actually happening at that time on Valentine's Day, which is supposed to be the dawning of the Age of Aquarius, which is very exciting and quite lovely, and it's all about opening the heart. So if you can, and if you want, regardless of whether you're in a relationship or not, connect in at that time and open your heart. If you can wake yourself up or set the alarm or whatever, or if you want to wait until 7:22, our time, you know, doesn't matter, but the alignment is at that time, and it would be a really lovely thing if you want to open your heart and feel that experience of that alignment. So there you go. I hope everyone has a lovely Valentine's Day, because as you say, it's really about the love, and it's really, if you're not in a relationship or if you're in a relationship, it's really about opening your heart and experiencing that place from a deeper place. So I hope you enjoyed this evening, and we'll connect next week.